Welcome to the Pinellas County Schools Tales from the Tech Side show. I am your host, James Wilson. In today's episode, we'll be talking about technology, creativity, and the arts. I have two special guests with me today, and they'll introduce themselves in a minute. But I want to just talk about for a second how when most of us think of art, we probably think about drawing, and there is so much more in the field of arts. And so that is some of the stuff we will talk about today. But let's get to my guests. So I have Jonathan Ogle.
Hello, James.
And I also have a Jory Spencer.
Glad to be here.
And so, Jonathan, can you tell us what you do and a little bit of your background?
Absolutely. I am the pre-K-12 visual arts specialist, the content specialist for Pinellas County Schools. I've been in this position for 3 years. Previous to that, I was the visual arts coordinator, technology integration coordinator through the visual arts department. And then before that, I was an art teacher for a number of years at all different levels.
Thank you for joining us. Jory, can you share a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Of course. So I have a similar role, but I'm on the performing arts side. So I supervise the music courses, theater, and dance. So I've been in the position for a couple of years. Before that, I was a middle school band director. So middle school was my chosen age group, which I know is a special group of people.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. Again, thank you to our listeners. Thank you for tuning in. And so really, I know that technology has been used for like digital drawing or digital art and sort of in the background of performances. And so what I really want to focus on is the creativity. Can technology actually inspire creativity versus just being used for creativity? So thoughts?
If I could start first, I'd just like to say that thanks to the PCS referendum, which started in 2004, the referendum, of course, is a small property tax increase that the Pinellas citizens have voted overwhelmingly the last four times, maybe is it four or five times? And some of that money goes, most of it goes to help teacher salaries. And then some of the money goes to reading, technology, and then performing arts and visual arts. And so from the very beginning, the visual arts department, Sue Castleman, the former art supervisor, had the vision of infusing, integrating technology into art classrooms so that students had these tools and the teachers had these tools that they can use creatively. And so the great news is that here we are in 2023, and it seems like we're getting through this pandemic, and we've learned a lot from that, but we've also learned a lot over the years on how we can use these tools for creativity. So as artists, we are materials based, and we look for things, whether they're solid or whether they're digital, whether it's like pixels or things that we can create with. And so it's a very exciting time because we have so many tools and materials at our disposal.
Okay.
Yeah, I think similar to what Jonathan said, one of the most exciting things about that sort of intersection of technology and the arts is access. So I think, my background growing up, I was, grew up in a very rural area. So I didn't necessarily have the most direct access to if I wanted to go see a play or, a huge concert or something like that. And so when we think about our students now, just the bridge alone of technology allows them to be able to, and go and look up this dynamic performance or go and watch that play and everything like that. And I think what sparked from that is potentially inspiration. So now that I can see, experience, watch more things, now I have a little bit more of an idea of what's possible. So I think just the access to so much more art forms allows and potentially sparks the student interest to how can I do that? Or how can I try that? And then from there, you know, discovering whatever the tools that are available for them to try to go after it.
That was interesting because I didn't think of how the technology, as you said, allows access, and then the access leads to inspiration where I'm now exposed to something that I wasn't exposed to before. So that was totally caught me off guard as far as, you know, I was like, good point. So, yeah. But I want to sort of press a little more and say, what about the people who just probably define creativity as something original, like fostering something original versus I'm doing it because I saw somebody else do it. Does technology aid in that originality aspect of the arts?
Well, I think that we can all agree that, you know, there's nothing really new under the sun, I think, that as the saying goes. So we're all being inspired by everyone else. And I think Ajori made a very good point about how with technology and access that we're seeing the creativity of others. And that allows us to become inspired and to build even new things. And they call it remixing, taking something and changing it, turning it into yourself and finding your own personal voice or vision and adding that to what you're doing. But it's also a good thing to be able to see how a master artist or performer, you know, works on their craft so that that I think will save some time because you're not really starting from square one. You're really being almost like taught by a master. So it's pretty neat to be able to see this through different tools.
So I want to talk about something that I think is prevalent, but it may not be. I'm not the expert in the arts, but I want to bring up something that is definitely discussed in education as a whole, and that's the influence of social media, right? So I'm old enough to remember when they had Vine, mm-hmm. right? Those very creative videos and, you know, and then you can, whether it's someone's YouTube or Facebook and they're singing and they're performing, how does social media now impact the way arts education is being done or thought about?
I think there are a few things. I think one of the things that in both of our areas we put a lot of emphasis on in our curriculum is giving and receiving criticism. And I think now with social media, just like access is more prevalent, so potentially is criticism. So I think that part of our sort of curriculum becomes more important. So you have to learn to sort of be able to discern, you know, okay, this person is giving me some constructive criticism. I can move forward with this. I can use this to further my art. This person, you know, just doesn't prefer it. Like they don't necessarily like what I'm doing. And that's okay too. Everything's not going to be for, you know, for everyone. Or okay, this person's just kind of being mean. And those are, you know, sort of very distinct things. But I think that the prevalence of social media, you know, it's sort of two-sided. I think that it's a little bit easier for people to find their communities. I think that's already something that the arts do so well. You know, you might have a student before they start school who, you know, they have these very specific interests and maybe no one in their family has them or no one has them to the extent or to the level that they do. You know, they start school, maybe they get plugged into an art class, maybe they get plugged into, you know, their elementary course or something like that. And they're like, wow, these people around me love this the way I do. I think as students get older, they potentially get even more specialized, you know, like it's not just art, but now it's this very specific, you know, kind of art. And maybe they're still the only one at their school who's interested in that. And so I think with something like social media, they can very quickly find their community of like, oh, there's still millions of people out here who love this. They're just not in Largo, Florida. So I think that's a huge positive that works to our advantage.
And to add to that, our arts teachers are also finding their community, and they're being pushed and inspired by other arts educators, in that they're seeing what they're doing in their classrooms or through special projects and performances, and they're I think they're upping their game because of that. We have a bunch of art teachers that are that prefer Instagram because it's so visually friendly. And so there's even a hashtag, our teachers of Instagram. And, you know, it's interesting to see the art teachers and how proud they are with what their students are doing in the classroom and outside the classroom.
And so I agree. But I would question two things just as examples. So for you, Jonathan, I would say memes, is that art? And for you, Ajori, it would be those videos that are spliced together, you know, where all of us, like a short performance, but you know, they're definitely editing in that. Can we consider those art?
If you see someone producing memes and they somehow have those displayed, perhaps projection or on a TV or monitor or something in a gallery, yes. If you just call it art, I suppose you might be the only one that agrees with that. But yeah, you know, it's creativity, it's creation that we're really looking forward to. So if students happen to be, I guess, inspired by producing memes, maybe that leads to something else that they can do. Maybe they'll want to create a short film, an art film or something, they could submit to Scholastic Art Awards. So it could be kind of the gateway into some other venture into creativity.
I love questions like that. I'm going to say yes. And I feel like if someone creates something with some sort of intention and it evokes some sort of response from me, sure, it's art. It may or may not be art that I prefer, but it did something. And so I love that. And, you know, Jonathan mentioned creativity, you know, splicing and editing, you know, videos or doing things of that nature is an incredible amount of work. You know, I think at the start of the pandemic, we were seeing a lot of those like sort of professional, sort of like Zoom concert things. And, you know, people were like, oh, you know, like the kids can do that. And they were sort of like expecting that. And I did do one. I was in the classroom at that time. I mean, that was like 20, 30 hours of video editing for a minute and a half, middle school band song. It was so much work. And, you know, a lot of those same things that we would talk about in the classroom, we're sitting and we're playing in the band and we're having to talk about balance and where is the melody and, you know, all those and transitions and those things. Like, I was having to sit in front of the computer and still make all those things happen because at the end of the day, the audience was used to a certain kind of experience. And so now we were having to give them that same experience, well, a similar experience, but in a different way. But having that base knowledge that we had learned in the classroom that we had gone over sort of allowed me and the students to accomplish that, even though now technology was much more at the forefront of the product. But we still had to have that knowledge to get there.
Okay, so it's more about the creativity and then, as you said, the reaction or invoking something from those that are viewing it is really what sort of pushes towards art or not art, right? So the next thing I want to talk about is the future of text integration into the arts. And again, there's a lot of, I want to say, controversy in education about and ChatGPT, which is the artificial intelligence that is making a lot of noise in the English language arts and reading classes, because ideally this AI can scrub the web and put together, you know, a paragraph or a essay, or, you know, even a you know, create a book or a draft based on whatever the student prompts them to do. Well, I was recently at the Future of Educational Technology Conference and was enlightened to find out that ChatGPT is not just the only AI that is in use. There's actually other AIs that are being used, and even in the arts, like Muse.net is one that will create a score for you. And then DALL-E will create a work of art, potentially, right? So what are your thoughts about the infusion, or the now the AI coming in and doing some of these things that were usually, you know, human created? Is that still art? Is there a place for AI in the arts?
Well, I'll say, you know, when I first started seeing this in 2022, that's the first time I saw it, I was a little bit taken aback, a little bit apprehensive about what I was seeing, because to be able to write a few sentences, descriptive sentences, into a an application, an online application, and then press return or enter and get an art piece that it's like a composite of all these different pieces that, as you said, AI scrubs from different sources and puts this composition together. And a lot of that work is from master artists or well-known artists in art history. And so, you know, some of that is like, okay, are we appropriating? Is there appropriation going on with these works? And, you know, I think that right now there's some real discussion in the arts world about this. I know, I emailed Scholastic Art Awards as we were getting close to our competition here for our region, Pinellas County Art Region. And I asked them, I said, what is your stance? What is, you know, on AI art? And they said it's not allowed. And for good reason, because if you can just, again, put in some text and you spit out some artwork and you try to say that is something that, you know, because art does take time generally. So that's problematic. And then the other thing is the college board said with AP art that no AI art is allowed. So the thing is, we know what's not allowed, but then we do, as educators, we want to figure out how can we use this? Because anytime there's a big change, you know, we have the Industrial Revolution. We have the informational revolution. Now we have AI, and that seems to be a revolution. We're seeing how that's now impacting even jobs. So if we look at what we can do with it, I was talking with an art teacher at the Student Surreal Show at the DALL-E Museum 2 weeks ago, and he was saying that he was using it where the students would write descriptive sentences, see what imagery would come up, and then use that to kind of as inspiration or some elements of that for visual referencing for their own original work. And so I do believe there's a place, and I think we're going to find that out. But right now it's just kind of messy, and we're trying to figure out, you know, how can we appropriately use this?
I love what Jonathan said about finding a place. I think in education especially, we tend to be really guarded with change. But the truth is, progress is clumsy. It's clumsy and it's messy and it's full of ethics issues, which you sort of brought up with the appropriation. It's full of questions. But if we don't go through that process, then we never come out on the other side of it. I always think it's funny when we have conversations about, like, well, I remember before cell phones and we did this and we did this and we did this. And the truth is, like, the cell phones aren't going away. they're never going to, I mean, until there's the next thing, whatever's past cell phones, it'll probably just be in our body and, you know,
implants.
You know, so like they're not going away. So if we fixate on like, I remember before, instead of here's where we are now, then we end up stuck, or we end up having a completely different conversations from our students. And so even thinking about that visual arts example, the DALL-E or DALL-E, where my head immediately went was arts integration lessons. And what if on the ELA side, we were crafting these elaborate descriptions and we were learning about adjectives and, you know, how to describe things, you know, tying into the visual arts class about, you know, how we describe art and perspective and color and, you know, like all those things. And we were like crafting these really good writings. We put it into that, you know, put it into that, and we see what we get. We have other students do the opposite, where they didn't see the sentences, they only see the art they're having to describe. Like already, like there are some really cool things that you can do with that. And it's true arts integration, where we're hitting art standard, visual art standards, we're hitting ELA standards. But it took not saying, oh gosh, no AI. But it took us saying like, where is the place for that? And to get somewhere. And maybe that is something in the future. Maybe people are creating art that way. Like I said, there are still clumsy ethics questions. But I think if we just shut everything down first, then we can't get to the progress.
That's amazing, because one of the things that I always say is that education is the place where we do the most research and we know the most stuff, but then we move the slowest. Right, it takes us so long to change. And to hear both of you have the mindset that, well, there's a place, we just have to figure it out. You know, for most people and most conversations that I've engaged in or heard or read, it's automatically a shutdown and no, and there's no place for it, and it's cheating, and we can't have that. But as you say, things evolve and change, and if we don't evolve and change with the times, then we get stuck again, as education tends to do. We have all the research, we have all the knowledge, and then we just lack application of it. And so that's great. But I'm not advocating for that student to go and say, use muse.net and submit and say, hey, this is what I composed for an assignment, right? Then there's, as you guys said, those ethics, right? Because we know right now AI cannot create originality. They're scrubbing and taking bits and pieces. But what happens when AI gets to the point, which eventually I think it will, right, where it is creating original, right? And then we're in, you know, Terminator.
Well, but then, and like the way I like to think about it is, then what is our mind freed up to do? You know, like then we're not on that, because it can do that. And I'm not saying we won't want to do that just as humans. But then what can we do? Because I think one of the coolest things is like problems and like puzzles really breed creativity. So when we get to that point, like who knows what we'll have the energy, the mental capacity to do, because it might be over there doing that, which is kind of scary, but kind of exciting.
Yeah. So gentlemen, thank you. This has been a great conversation. I invite you back anytime to sit down and discuss with us. For our listeners, I want to thank you for tuning in. As always, remember to like, subscribe, and share.